south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Now, here's a boots-on-the-ground story I forgot to tell you about. It happened about a month ago in Colombia. Medellin, Colombia, to be precise. You know, most of my friends know, in a past life, I was an engineer. And that in a past life, I constructed quite a few houses and buildings. So naturally, friends being friends, they lean on you for stuff once in a while. And you oblige if it's not too excessive. They don't lean too hard. And they buy me lunch. Anyway, a gringo friend of mine who's been living in Medellin, Colombia for a couple of years now. He has a Colombian girlfriend and all that. Well, he decided to finance a little business venture of hers. A hair extension and wig shop, of which he knows nothing about, doesn't care about, but... his girlfriend knows everything and anything about that stuff, and she wears extensions herself. Believe it or not, hair extensions are a huge business in Latin America, especially with Latinos who have hair on the kinky side. In fact, if you come down to the Caribbean side of Latin America, you'll find there's a hair extension joint, it seems, on every corner. Though not so much at all on the Pacific side of Latin America. And of course, all the ladies want real hair extensions, and those things really cost. Though admittedly, middle and lower class Latinas will use the fake synthetic hair extensions because the real stuff's not within their budget. So anyway, she set up this little hair extension place in a busy little middle class, Latin middle class that is, business district with lots and lots of car and foot traffic. Though it's not a place I'd recommend because, well, it's known to be a bit dangerous. But you probably figured this out by now. Latinos and Latinas have a different vision of what's dangerous and what's not. That is different from what us gringos and expats perceive dangerous to mean. For example, if you've been living in a Milwaukee or Cleveland neighborhood in the suburbs, and you haven't heard of a single break-in or assault in, let's say, the last 5 years, well, to us, that's a pretty safe neighborhood. However, when in Latin America, in a so-called Latin American middle or lower middle class neighborhood, practically everyone knows of someone who's been robbed in the last year or so. Yet most of them will still tell you that their neighborhood's pretty safe. But remember, we're talking about middle class up in Cleveland and Milwaukee versus middle class here in Latin America. Big difference, because middle class in Latin America is pretty much the way we see lower middle class, trailer parks and white trash. Not that there's anything wrong with living in or being brought up in substandard housing or a lower middle class or substandard neighborhood. Hey, it's luck of the draw. You're born where you're born and you're brought up where you're brought up. In fact, a lot of my best friends came from substandard neighborhoods and housing. In fact, my own family had its ups and downs, and over the past 50 or so years, we oscillated between middle and lower middle class, too. But, you know, some people pull themselves up out of that and later on fly pretty high, and some of those later on get their wings clipped pretty good, too. But I digress as usual. Let's get back to the story. Anyway, I was asked to help my gringo friend set up security cameras in his girlfriend's new hair extension business. So we went down to the local electronic shops where they sold security equipment and couldn't find anything that was the latest and greatest. In other words, 4K. That means 8 megapixel resolution for each camera. And that gives you ultra high definition. And that's what you want, because when you zoom in, then you see things very clearly and from a great distance. So anyway, after hitting 3 electronic shops, we found out that there were no 4K cameras to be found, only 2, 3, and 4 megapixel cameras. That's high definition, but it's not ultra high definition. So we ended up ordering a complete system from the U.S. online. Now, I know of a certain U.S. security camera company that was running a 50% off sale on almost everything during the 2 weeks leading up to Christmas. So he ended up buying a complete 8 camera system with a 2 terabyte hard drive, which allows you to record continuously for about a week. And it included the plug-and-play NVR, cables and connectors too, all except the monitor. Then you just buy an HD or Ultra HD TV set, and you're good to go. And what's very cool these days when you buy security systems is you can see your cameras on your smartphone. That's the way to go, especially if you got your camera set up for motion detection. Then the system will shoot you a little message on your cell phone saying something's up. You never know, there might be a rat in your store at 2 in the morning, furry or otherwise. So then what's something like that cost, an 8 camera Ultra HD system? Just slightly less than $500, but remember, that was a half price, 2 week only deal. Then he had that system shipped to his mail and package forwarding service in Miami, and it landed in Medellin in about 2 weeks. Oh, and remember, I was telling you, if you use a mail forwarding service in Miami, if your purchase is under $200 or $300, depending on the Latin country you're sending it to, you pay no government fees or import taxes. And the good news for my gringo buddy? Well, the company he ordered that stuff from in the States gladly sent it out in 3 packages, so they split the $500 so that each package nicely slipped under the minimum taxable limit. So then after it arrived, we went and picked up the system. We installed it. Took us a whole day, 2 guys, because, you know, you have to make it look nice when it's in a business establishment. At least gringos and expats do. However, most Latino businesses don't seem to care. They want the cameras to work, but they don't care what the installation looks like. They don't seem to mind a rat's nest of wires, even when it's dead obvious. But on this particular project, there were 2 real-life gringos working on it, so we had to make it look appropriately first world-like. Sure, we could have done the job Latin style in 3 or 4 hours, but it took us the whole day, something like 10 hours. And miracle of miracles, after plugging everything in and flipping all the switches, it actually worked 100%, right down to the last detail, the very first time. I was surprised because it seems like every project I've been on, you have to do some tweaking here and there after you flip the switches, but this time, perfect. I was truly not expecting that. Now, as far as the camera setup, we had 6 cameras inside the business and 2 outside, one covering half the parking lot in the big busy street out in front, and the other covering the other half of the parking lot and the other half of the big busy chaotic 4-lane street out in front. And man, with those 4K cameras, it was crystal clear. So anyway, it was getting late. It was time to go. So we flipped the switches on and started it recording. And the next day, around noon, we came back. You see, we promised we'd come back the next day to train her girlfriend and her 2 workers how to use it. And while we were doing that and downloading the apps so that the cameras could be seen on their cell phones, suddenly, 2 guys rushed in, obviously upset. I recognized them. They were the 2 guys that worked at the paint store, which was right next door. Then the little pudgy one said in a kind of a panic, "I saw you installing cameras yesterday. Are they working?" I said, "Sure. They work fine." He said, "Oh, really? Do they record?" And my buddy said, "Sure, they record." He said, "Did they happen to be on this morning around 9 o'clock? And my buddy said, "Yeah, they've been going since yesterday. They record for a couple days at least, maybe a week." He said, "Oh, really? Can I see the playback from around 9 this morning? Because, you see, we've got a big problem. Someone stole a motorcycle from right in front of the paint store." Then he said, "We figured it happened around 9 o'clock when we were both in back unloading from the paint truck." Then he shook his head, raised his voice, and said, "It was a brand new motorcycle, too. My boss's motorcycle. And he's pissed off at us because we were in the store when it happened." Then he took his phone and punched in some text and said, "That's him right now, and is he pissed? He's down at the police station right now reporting it." Then my gringo buddy said, "Well, let's have a look at the playback." Of course, all this is going down in Spanish because we're way off the tourist trail in a part of Medellin that's not even close to Poblado. The Poblado district in Medellin being the place all the gringos and expats are piling into. And my buddy, yeah, he speaks Spanish. And he, like me, came down here to Latin America not knowing a lick of Spanish. So how did he learn? Well, the best way possible. He has a Colombian girlfriend who speaks about 6 words of English. So he instantly got thrown into the fire, and you do burn for a couple of months. It's no fun. But after those first 2 or 3 months of high anxiety, suddenly your conversational Spanish starts kicking in. And that's, by the way, why so many gringos and expats never do learn their Spanish, because they're never thrown into the fire. They take the easy way out and relocate on or near the tourist areas and find themselves a bunch of gringo expats to hang with, or a Latino girl or boyfriend who speaks English. But again, I digress. Sorry about that. Where were we? Oh, yeah. So then I started setting up the playback and said to the guy, "You mean a brand new motorcycle got stolen?" He said, "Yeah, it was a nice Kawasaki model, too. Not one of those cheap Tata or Geely bikes from India," he said. Then my gringo buddy said, "Well, how'd they do it? They throw it in the back of a truck or something?" Then we looked at the playback. And sure enough, both of the cameras caught the guy in the act. It was a tall, skinny guy with a baseball hat and a pink sweatshirt that said Baltimore Orioles on it. Yeah, like I said, Latinos just love any clothing with English lettering on it, even though 95% of the time they don't understand what it means. In fact, that was the topic of discussion just a couple of days ago when I was sitting in a car repair shop waiting for him to mount some tires. I was sitting in the lounge and the big screen TV had a Latin music channel on. Of course, it was that infantile, retarded music they call reggaeton. That's just beyond painful for us gringos and expats to listen to. Anyway, me and the gringo I was with, who also is a former musician, he said, Johnny, why is it that all the Latino bands you see, whether they're playing in a concert somewhere, at a bar, or even on TV, they're all wearing t-shirts, sweatshirts, sweaters, etc., with English letters, phrases, and sayings on them? Now, what does that really say about Latino culture? Or think of it this way. You'll certainly never see a bunch of American rock and rollers, music groups, whatever, wearing t-shirts, jackets, and sweaters with Spanish words and letters and phrases on them, will you? Though I guess there's one chance in 1,000 they might be wearing a Corona or Cuervo Gold t-shirt. You get the point. It's the idea that 99.9% of Latinos are extreme gringo wannabes. They love everything and anything that comes from north of the border, which means they really don't understand what it's all about, do they? They have a very incomplete education on the subject. What it very strongly implies is that they much prefer gringo culture to their own. So in the end, I guess we'll never know what it's really like to grow up in a culture with people telling you over and over again that you're from a third world country. It's gotta be taking its toll on people's self-esteem. But again, I digress, but that's normal for me, right? So anyway, we played back the video and saw the guy steal the motorcycle. And no, he didn't throw it in the back of a truck. He pulled out a key and in 5 whole seconds had it started and he was off. Then the little pudgy guy said, oh, he's got a key. He's got a master or a copy from the dealership. I said, what? He said, sometimes a mechanic will make a copy in the dealership and sell it or give it to a bad boy in his family. And since every dealership has a file on its customers, from there it doesn't take much work to track down a guy's house or place of business. So anyway, we made a little snippet MP4 file for the guy, sent it to his email, which he'll give to his boss, who will certainly take it to the cops, who will do nothing, because this is Latin America. I kind of think it's much the same up in the U.S. too, since conditions up by you are degrading rapidly, or you wouldn't be listening to this show. So anyway, the mystery was solved, and thanks to the fact the cameras were 4K, man, we had that guy dead to rights. And I'm sure in the future all cops and law enforcement agencies, even here in Latin America, will have facial recognition, so they'll be able to nab guys like that. And this guy, he's certainly involved in other crimes. I mean, he's got a system down. Stealing bikes is probably his full-time job. Hey, I'm not advocating facial recognition. It's a huge invasion of privacy. But I believe there's absolutely nothing wrong with having a database of faces that have already committed crimes. That should be a given. But as for the regular law-abiding public, not good. So anyway, the bottom line here is, as I watched that guy casually steal that vehicle, the first thing that popped into my head was my vehicle kill switch. Now, I haven't mentioned that kill switch for probably 5 years now. The fact is, every time I buy a car, I install one. Best place to put it is down near the bottom edge of the dashboard, near to that lever that pops up your hood. And it's so simple. Just one heavy-duty switch and 2 14-gauge wires that lead right to your car's fuse box. Now, it's simple, but might take an hour or two to install because you'll have to drill a couple of holes and feed those 2 wires through from the dashboard to the engine compartment. But it is foolproof and dead easy to install. And the cost, no more than $5 to $10 in parts. So who do you get to install one of these things and how does it work? You do it yourself or call your brother over and feed him some chips and beer. And if you want the exact step-by-step instructions, I put a little report together myself along with diagrams. And if you want it, just shoot me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. I know, everything's YouTube these days, but you know what? I don't feel like doing that. So if you install one of these switches using my method, go ahead and film it and put it on YouTube. Get your 15 minutes of fame. Actually, it'll be a lot more than 15 minutes. It'll be evergreen. People will be downloading that thing forever. So how does it work? Well, I guess I should tell you that, huh? All you're doing is putting a switch between either the positive wire that goes to your gas pump or the positive wire that initiates your starter. You can pick either one of those connections off your fuse box. So, for example, when you pull the cover off of your fuse box in your car, there's usually 2 fuse boxes, one down by your brake pedal or right above the lever that pops your hood, and the other under the hood very near your battery. Anyway, when you pull the cover off your fuse box and look at the inside cover, there'll be a legend there. In other words, it'll say which fuse goes for what. So you locate the fuse that either goes to the fuel pump or to the ignition. I usually pull out the fuse for the ignition myself and run 2 14-gauge wires from there right to a heavy-duty, single-pole, single-throw switch that I've mounted in a hole I've drilled far down at the bottom of the dashboard, near the lever where you pop the hood. Each car model is a little different, so you find the area that's most convenient for you. Now, here's how it works. When you start your car, the switch has to be in the on position, and you leave it in that position all the while you're driving your car. All right, so now you're going to park. You turn off the car's ignition, but before you get out of the car, flip the switch down to the off position. And now, if anyone has a key or tries to hotwire your car or is trying some kind of hack, it just will not start. In other words, no one's going to be able to steal your car unless they know that switch is there. So don't tell anybody. And even when you go to have your car worked on, new brakes, getting a paint job, whatever, don't tell the mechanic anything. Just leave the switch up in the on position. He'll never know what it is. He won't care. Because the car will start and stop fine, just as if it didn't have the switch, as long as it's in the on position. Now, I also know that probably 95% of you listeners out there don't know what a kill switch is, and I just explained it to you. And though you probably wouldn't think of putting a kill switch in your car up in the States, Canada, or in Europe, because people have full coverage and a stolen car usually gets found. The thing is, here in Latin America, it's more like the Wild Wild West, and in some ways that's very desirable. Although, it's the Wild Wild West in a couple of negative ways, too. For example, down here there's a much greater chance of car and motorcycle theft. So then knowing that, why not spend $5 or $10 and put in a kill switch? It's great security and a kind of a fail-safe, extremely cheap insurance policy. Though you might just say, and a lot of gringos and expats do, I'll just get full coverage insurance for my car, and if it gets stolen, hey, I'm covered. Why not? It's cheap. Problem is, and you longtime listeners have probably heard me mention this, when you buy full coverage here in Latin America, they generally have a 3% deductible for collisions and theft. In other words, they'll take the present value of your car, multiply it by 3%. Let's say your car is worth $20,000. That's $600, right? That means if you get into a fender bender, you'll have a $600 deductible. And if they steal your car, you'll have a $600 deductible against the present value of your car, too. The thing is, if you have a kill switch in your car and you actually use it, that means when you leave your car, you flip it to the off position. The result? There's really no way in the hell anyone's going to be able to steal that car unless they tow it away. I know, some of you are thinking, what if someone sticks a gun in my face and says, get out, I'm taking your car? Well, you may have heard rumors of that happening, but I've been down here something like 30 years now and don't know anyone that's ever happened to, nor has anyone ever told me of anyone they knew what's happened to. Though I have heard cases of people who pull up to a stoplight. Oh, and this only seems to happen when people are totally consumed with their smartphones, where a motorcycle with two passengers pulls up, knocks on the window, points a gun and says, give me your phone. What they won't say is, pull over and give me your car. Because, you see, the more common scenario of two thieves on a motorcycle is strictly grab, snatch, and get the hell out of there. Whereas stealing a car or a motorcycle involves a lot more planning and logistics. So, again, my suggestion for all gringos and expats coming down who are going to own a vehicle, fork out the $5 or $10, dig deep in your pocket, and put in a kill switch. So, if you want the plans for the switch I've used on practically every car I've bought here in Latin America, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Oh, and you know, even though I don't recommend buying or using a motorcycle here in Latin America, that's kind of suicidal, that kill switch works equally well. It's a great deterrent when someone tries to steal a vehicle, and it won't start, even if you have the master key. So what happens then? Well, they'll just walk away and target an easier mark, and probably punch the mechanic in the face that sold them the master key. And yes, when I talk about a master key, I'm talking about a regular key and those electronic keys too. You know how a lot of cars have those electronic remote fobs that you put on your key ring. Now there's an odd word for you, fob. Every car with a start button has one. Just know that standard keys and those key ring devices are hackable. In fact, you can go right on the internet to the pirate sites and find programs that allow you to hack those things. Or just go on YouTube and put in how to hack your car keys. Oh, and while you pull up the list, you'll see there's a YouTube video showing some bad boys in England who took only 30 seconds to hack and steal a $110,000 Tesla. Okay, let's change gears now and hit on an email. This is from an expat insider, a seminar alumnus, Miss L. She says, Johnny, I've been enjoying your recent podcast on dirty electricity and how to measure it. I've read that LED lights, however, will damage your retina and that they should have a filter on them. Not sure if that's an option at this time, so I pulled mine out of the house and replaced them with the old Edison-style bulbs, incandescents. Someone also indicated to me that LED lights were originally part of a weapon system, and that they don't produce very good light. Anyway, have a good one, Johnny. signed Miss L. Well, thanks for that, Miss L. And, you know, being that I've studied up a lot on dirty electricity, and I try to minimize the toxic things I put in my body or have to breathe or even look at, which is why I don't watch TV or listen to rap, hip-hop, reggaeton, or even post-1980s rock. However, being down here in Latin America, you'll soon enough see everyone's got their TV on, all the waking hours anyway, and there's music blasting from everywhere. And if you have anything like the normal American tastes, you'll be curious, especially since you don't know the language. And for that certain case, it's a good thing, too. But like rap and hip-hop, if you listen to the words and can actually understand them, you'll soon see it for what it is, toxic noise pollution. Even worse, because it's a kind of insulting and degrading type of noise pollution. I suppose I'm sounding like an old fogey, huh? However, for my money, it's one of the few big negatives I see with living here in Latin America. Because you're always bombarded with real horse reggaeton. That means every car, taxi, Uber, restaurant, bar, disco, and shopping mall is blasting it too. Now, I suppose you could learn to tune it up. As for me, being that I'm kind of a B-grade musician, it probably irritates me more than the average guy because I know about music composition and structure. I know what pure luck and lack of talent is when I see it. But getting back to Miss L's email, we're talking about a different kind of pollution here, light pollution. We're talking LED lights now. I think they're great, but only if you choose them correctly. And as far as LEDs being originally part of a weapons system, I remember way back when I was in engineering school, LED lights were all red and were used first as timers, clocks, and counters. So you have to imagine that one of the very first uses of LED lights would have been in airplane and jet cockpits and weapon systems, simply because they were much more lighter and energy efficient than the old bulky mechanical and fluorescent numeric display systems they were using before. Now, as far as LEDs producing not such a healthy kind of light, well, they do and they don't. You just have to select correctly. So here's what you didn't know. When you buy any light bulb, look at the package. They have numbers and values on them. The important ones being lumens, which is light intensity, and one called warmth, which is measured in degrees Kelvin, and the range generally 2 to 10,000 Kelvins. That's actually considered a heat range, but the higher the number, the bluer the light. The lower the number, the warmer and more natural the light emitted. And your so-called Edison or incandescent lights that have a filament are on the low end from 2 to 3,000 Kelvin. But low is good, high is bad. By the way, Lord Kelvin was the guy who developed the scale that's just exactly like Celsius or degrees centigrade, except the Kelvin scale starts at absolute zero with 0 degrees Kelvin, where molecules are not moving at all. Everyone knows that water freezes at 0 degrees centigrade or Celsius. That's the same as saying water freezes at 273 degrees Kelvin, because absolute zero is minus 273 degrees Celsius. Are you with me? Yes, no, maybe, or are you checking Instagram or looking at YouTube? Better not. Now, you know, when you turn on an electric stove and it first starts getting warm, you finally see it kind of red. That'd be something like 2,000 degrees Kelvin. And then if you were to crank the electricity way up and it got very hot, finally, the element would turn blue and then white. Of course, it would have been destroyed by then. But in the blue to white range, you're talking about 6,000 to maybe 10,000 degrees Kelvin. And as far as causing health problems or light damaging your eyes, fact is you want to have LED lights or any kind of light as warm or yellow as possible, low on the Kelvin scale, around 2 to 3,000 degrees Kelvin. The good news is you can pick your LED lights by the Kelvins they put out. Just pick something within 2 to 3,000. That'd be a nice, warm, incandescent-looking bulb. The problem is if you pick out an LED that puts out blue light, your body starts producing a hormone called melanopsin. Yep, it's got the word melanin in it. And that messes with your natural sleep cycle, screwing up your biorhythms and biological clock. Oh, and there's one more thing on the label you should pay attention to. It's something called CRI, meaning Color Rendering Index. You should look for a high CRI number because it's all about color accuracy. In other words, you want your light bulb to produce an accurate rendering of the things that it's illuminating. For example, when you walk into a hospital, you know the lighting's making that place look institutional, and that makes you feel terrible, doesn't it? However, if you have lights with a low Kelvin number, a low K number, let's say 2500, and a high CRI number, let's say 90. If they had that kind of lighting in hospitals, you'd feel kind of warm and fuzzy. I know that doesn't sound possible, but it is true. There are thousands of studies that prove it. By the way, that CRI number goes from 0 to 100. Pick something that's 80 to 100 and you'll be fine. That means whatever the light is shining on, it'll reproduce the color accurately. So by all means, buy LED lights, but always in the 2 to 3,000 Kelvin range. Then you'll have a nice, warm, yellow light. And pick a high CRI number from 80 to 100. Do read those labels. And remember, when you see a light bulb that says soft or warm white, that's the one you want. That'll be in the 2 to 3,000 Kelvin range. My advice, skip the LED bulbs that say bright white. Those are from 3 to 5,000 K, and especially forget the ones that say daylight. That's 5,000 K to 6,500 K. Heavy in the blue range, which disrupts your hormones and your sleeping pattern. And lastly, they're all DC powered. That's direct current, meaning you can use any old battery to power one of them at the right voltage. But most of us don't power them with batteries. We power them off of 110-60 cycle, coming off your wall current. So within each LED lamp, there's a little rectifier that turns AC 60 cycle to DC voltage. Remember, they run on DC. And that's where all the dirty electricity comes from, not the light itself. It's the switching back and forth of 60 cycles a minute to produce the DC voltage. Which is why when you hold your electromotive force meter up to an LED bulb and look at the measurements to see what's safe, I've checked it, and you usually have to get at least a foot away from an LED source. However, let's say you're out camping and you're using a battery-operated lantern. Well, that produces no dirty electricity at all because it's running directly from a 6, 9, or 12-volt battery. It's not taking 60-cycle house current and rectifying it and turning it to DC. That's the dirty source we're talking about. Though admittedly, some LED manufacturers rectify AC to DC much more smoothly, meaning without peaks or spikes, than other manufacturers. So the dirty electricity component will vary a lot from company to company, which is why you should pick up an EMF meter. If you want to know the one I recommend and use myself, you can get it on Amazon. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Oh, and by the way, try not to use dimmer switches. They cause the dirtiest electricity of all. All right, just a plug here. My new and permanent website is expatplanb.com. Very soon I'll be posting my upcoming July 2020 seminar information there and my newly revised Latin American healthcare report. You'll want to have that report if you're anywhere along in your Plan B. So be sure to go to expatplanb.com and check it out. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.